Scribbler's Corner is brought to you by Brad Kuhn and Associates and the Jacks by Jacks Literary Arts Festival.
Hey, y'all. Welcome to Scribbler's Corner, the podcast about writers and writing, broadcasting from River of Grass Studios, where two rivers meet and you never know who will tie up to the dock for a chat and a fresh cup of coffee. I'm Darlin Finch Kuhn, but my friends call me the Scribbler. Hope McMath is a cultural leader, educator, artist, and activist whose knowledge of and passion for the arts is matched by a strong commitment to social justice and generating positive change in organizations and the community. She connects the arts to community needs, including education, accessibility, the environment, wellness, and inclusion and diversity. A Florida native, McMath earned a bachelor's degree in visual art and art history and a master of arts in teaching from Jacksonville University. She served at the Cummer Museum of Art and Gardens for 22 years, the last eight as its executive director. During her time at the Cummer Museum, from her early years as a museum educator through her tenure as director, McMath implemented art programs, education, outreach, and facility expansions that increased the Cummer's relevance and reputation. Her commitment to using the arts to lift up conversations around education, race, equity, and universal human rights has been recognized with many awards in Jacksonville, and she is now director and founder of the Yellow House, which is an amazing space that we're going to talk about today. Hope, welcome to River of Grass.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
I'm so happy that you're here. We've had such a good time since we moved back to Jacksonville, getting to know you and many of the artists and writers around town. And one of the places that has just felt so much like home is the Yellow House. So talk to us about how that came about. I understand that it only got started about 2 years ago as well.
Yes, and as we've joked, we opened it just for you.
Yeah, we appreciate that.
So Yellow House really came about after I left the Cummer Museum with a desire to get closer to the ground with the work I was doing, both as an artist, an arts professional, and as an activist. I spent about a year exploring exactly what that would look like and initially thought I would leap into another larger organization and sort of bring the arts piece into social service in some way. And it was really through that exploration that I started to realize the work I wanted to do would require quite a bit of freedom and independence, because I was really interested in doing the work as courageously as possible and with as many people as possible. And so it became clear that if I was going to do that, that I just might have to birth it. And I actually don't consider myself entrepreneurial at all. So it wasn't an easy decision to say, oh, well, I'll just start something. But that's exactly what happened. My husband was really the final voice in that. He said, you know, what's the worst that can happen? You start it, you have some fun, you make a mess, and if it doesn't work, you get a real job again.
Oh, wow. And, he sounds great.
He is great and is also an artist, and we've been together 20 years, so he knows what makes me tick, too. And so from that, Yellow House was born. It's, again, not even been quite 2 years that it's been open to the public, but it's been just about two years exactly since I decided to open a space dedicated to art and social justice.
Now, that's located at 577 King Street, is that right?
And that's correct.
In the Cork Arts District near Riverside.
It is. And that location was also selected for very specific reasons. One, my building is right next to the Cork Arts District, which houses 70-something visual and performing artists. So you couldn't have better proximity to creative energy than to be there. But it also sits at the intersection of what I would consider the two parts of Jacksonville. Half a mile one way takes you to the very cool, very Tony, historic district of Riverside and Avondale. And at the end of that street is actually one of the wealthiest blocks in the city of Jacksonville, right along the beautiful St. John's River. But if you go a half a mile the other way, you end up in a community that many in Jacksonville have forgotten or maybe never even knew existed, the Lackawanna and Mixontown community, which socioeconomically is almost the opposite of the other direction. And so I was interested in establishing a place, an idea that could just maybe use the arts to bridge those communities, those two sides of Jacksonville.
And how is that working?
It's a work in progress. It's going beautifully well. It's also challenging to be able to stay grounded in the work in which the people you're really trying to do the work for are centered in the work. And so trying to be a place where those who already love and appreciate and engage in the arts, at the same time that you're trying to be relevant and open and welcoming to people who have maybe never had that kind of interaction, is interesting. It's super fun, but has its own challenges to speaking what sometimes feels like multiple languages, even though I know in my heart and really all the way to my marrow that that's not the case, that the language is very much the same.
Mm-hmm. Great. I know when I've gone to events at the Yellow House, it does seem like it's a wonderful eclectic mix of people and ages and levels of artistic talent, and it's part of what I've been looking for in Jacksonville, which is I want to experience this entire range of citizens and people just learning about art and getting their eyes opened to that sort of thing. But then also you have people who know a lot about art, but when they walk in and they see the social justice aspect, so there are eyes being opened in many different ways, and it's all in one place, and it's all this lovely interaction that I find very stimulating. So good on you.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's also physically, it's an intimate space, even though a lot of our work doesn't necessarily happen in the building that we call the Yellow House. It is an old yellow house. Well, now it's yellow, but it's a domestic type of interior. So the fact that the front room is still set up like a living room is very intentional. We want that to be the community's living room, a place where anybody can come and sit and converse and chill out and have a snack and share ideas, share their own stories. And because the gallery spaces are also intimate, you know, they used to be dining rooms and bedrooms, that people are almost forced to gaze at one another, to bump into one another, to end up in dialogue with the works of art or the poetry that's on the walls. You sort of can't avoid it in that space. It's not like a larger cultural space where you can walk in and stand in the middle of a very large room and kind of scan it and then decide who or what you're going to engage with. Here, there's this little sense of discovery as you're going from room to room. And I really love that. I love that about working small, but intentional.
Yeah. I was thinking about my movement through the Yellow House, and you're right. As you're leaving one room and entering another, you're in a narrow like bedroom doorway, and you're bumping elbows with people and saying hello and excuse me. And when you encounter a piece of art or a poem on the wall, you feel compelled to comment on it in a way that you wouldn't at, say, a large, lovely gallery like the Comer. I don't know that I would encounter a piece of art there and feel compelled to turn to the person next to me and ask what they think. But at Yellow House, most definitely, it's a conversation from the second you walk in. Mm-hmm. I see that. That's very cool. Now, what are you thinking about doing? You're 2 years in. It's a time of evaluation. How's it going? What's worked? What needs improvement? What fresh new ideas are coming up for you? So tell us about your plans. How are you going to evolve?
Well, you know, some of it's evolving from what the community is coming to me with. Mm-hmm. In fact, that is the evolution. Mm-hmm. And so now that we're open and artists and writers and activists are feeling comfortable with this idea of Yellow House, they're coming up with their own thoughts of how to leverage this to further the work of the community. And so part of it has been lots of listening and sort of digging in with diverse groups of people to say, you know, what is next? And so there'll be some exhibitions coming up in the next year that are driven much less by me. And it's really about a process of co-creation of people of all ages and different interests and abilities coming together to create something that hasn't happened yet in this community. I also am spending some time really thinking about my work as an artist. I'm a printmaker. I work with words more visually than otherwise. But really thinking about how to use a space like Yellow House and my own practice as an artist to create a space where anybody can come together to sort of tap into their own creativity, but also lift up powerful messages of progress. Mm-hmm. That's what I do in my own work. And I'm not interested in dictating that for others, but I am interested in providing the space, the permission, the safety for other people to be able to do the same. So to make my own art practice more transparent, I guess, and mm-hmm. open for others to be a part of that and to set type on my letterpress and mm-hmm. to carve blocks so that they can print an idea and a message over and over and over again so that they can line the city streets if they want mm-hmm. to with those messages. Yeah. I'm really interested in how to help people activate that part of them. So it's something I've always wanted to do more specifically with Yellow House, but the incredible busyness of Yellow House since we opened, which has been a shock. I really thought I would sit around for the first year trying to figure out how to engage people in the idea of Yellow House. And that just hasn't been the problem, but it meant I was really ill prepared for the level of interest that it's had. So now I'm reflecting a bit on the things that we haven't done yet that we had intended on doing.
I can't imagine how you find a moment to sleep. You're so busy there with one wonderful event right after the other and one wonderful show. I followed with great interest your 100 Days of Hope, which was your printmaking, and it was just stunning work, and I'm very thrilled. Brad and I today are the proud owners of one of your woodcut prints that reads Speak It and has a microphone, and it's, of course, very meaningful to us as we do the Scribbler's Corner podcast, so thrilled to have that. We're going to hang it here in the studio and feel empowered every time we see it to get our message out to the world. You said that you were interested in working with young people. Mm-hmm. You were telling me at lunch about some exciting new plans there and that they sort of came to you and said, we have an idea, and were a little surprised when you were so open and willing to do that.
Yeah, so part of what we've been doing at Yellow House is when we're working with artists, whoever they are, is making sure their voice is truly centered in the work, whether we're working with people from the immigrant community or LGBTQ artists. And we've also done a lot of work with young artists. I mean, high school age, high school and university, most often in integrating their work into our exhibitions and our poetry readings and our community conversations, and not integrating them in a way where you have a corner dedicated to the work of students, but where they're integrated in with artists who are pros, who have sometimes been doing the work for decades, and showing the community that when you start to break down those definitions of what we consider an artist worthy of being on the walls versus a, quote, emerging artist, I'm sort of interested in breaking those definitions down, because I don't think they matter much. If the work's good and compelling, the work's good and compelling, doesn't matter to me whether they're 16 or 60. And so through that work, some of the young people that we've given space to have come to me saying, we want to do this on a more regular basis, not just a project, but ongoing. And so a group of teen artists and writers are about to establish a new program at Yellow House called TAG at Yellow House. And that's Teen Artist Group, where they will combine their work as young artists and as activists and see how they can work together as a team of people to create the kind of community they want to live in. And so the idea of cross-pollinating these young writers with young artists, with young activists is really exciting to me, partly because I would have been so excited about that kind of a platform when I was that age. And so to see these young people like really hungry to do this and recognize that Yellow House could be that gracious space for them to do that in is exactly the kind of thing we want to see happen with Yellow House, where the power of it is not in my hands. It is in theirs. It's going to be really cool to see what happens with that work.
It sure will be. I can't wait. One thing I noticed, it must be incredibly freeing and feel very powerful for you to just be able to say, yes, I want to do that, or no, that's not the direction I want to follow. When you've been in the conventional art world for so long, where there are boards and panels and committees and every decision takes months and that sort of thing. What is it like to just, I almost see you as a fairy godmother who waves your magic wand and yes, you can have the TAG program at my space. How does that feel? And you know, do you miss anything about the way things used to be?
It's a great question. And I think I'm answering it differently today than I would have a year ago, for sure. It's freeing and frightening. The freedom of playing with who you want to play with, lifting up the messages you want to lift up, partnering with the organizations that you feel absolutely aligned with, and being small enough and scrappy enough where I'm not trying to pay a $10,000 electric bill. that is all very freeing. And I feel like it leaves a lot of space to work with all kinds of people in all kinds of ways. It's also really intimidating. It feels a little vulnerable at times, which I don't really mind being in that space of vulnerability. But I don't have anything I can hide behind. And so I feel actually a greater sense of responsibility to community now, which is a little bit strange, than I did when I actually was responsible for a multi-million dollar organization. Because the community I'm talking about is right in front of me. They're the people I'm actually holding hands with in this work and walking with versus walking for. And so I love it. And it's put me much closer to my own sense of creativity, a much stronger understanding of my own privilege and the ways in which I need to be using that and want to be using that. And, you know, I'm not out there raising money all day long every day. And I mean, I'm so grateful for my long career at the Cummer, and I just have always adored that organization and always will. But it was definitely time, and I realize it more now than I did at the time I left, mm-hmm. how hungry I was as a single human being mm-hmm. who needed to feel really connected to this place I was choosing to stay. And that being in that position of an executive director of a large nonprofit, there's just so many moving parts, and it's complicated work. It's joyful work. Am I happy not to have a board? Yeah. You know, as wonderful as that is too, and the amazing learning that happens, our work is so responsive in some ways right now. It's mm-hmm. it's literally looking at what's happening in the world around us. And is there a way for the arts to be engaged in that conversation? And I can turn my little ship really fast right now. And a big organization can't do that. And shouldn't necessarily do that. So that piece I really do love.
You know, when I was writing my novel, Sewing Holes, and I was thinking about my life in Jacksonville and what was meaningful and impactful to me, the Cummer played such mm-hmm. a big part of my childhood. And we were not a family of means. Mm-hmm. My father delivered bread from Marita Bakery, and my mother was a stay-at-home, what they called housewife back then. And so we would go to the symphony when they had the free Pops concerts, mm-hmm. and we mm-hmm. would go to the Cummer when they had a free day, or, you know, throw a couple of bucks in the basket and go in and enjoy. But my mother would take us to the public library and all of that. So we had a lot of music and art and culture in our lives, but it was on the days when it didn't cost much to do so.
Yeah.
And I remember that place so well and so vividly, and what a magical place it was for me, in the gardens and in the galleries. And there's a chapter in my book that happens there. So, you know, I was trying to say thank you and I love you, Cummer. But I had no idea, of course, as a child, and even as an adult writing about my childhood, I had no idea that there was so much involved in making that magic happen. And so
just
many people.
So many mm-hmm. people, you know.
Right.
I mean, great board members and donors mm-hmm. and staff and volunteers mm-hmm. and artists and, you know, people from the immediate neighborhood mm-hmm. and peers out in the field. And I mean, it's an extraordinary place, and our city is really fortunate to have it, and that baton keeps getting passed, and it's been passed again, mm-hmm. And it will continue to evolve and thrive and provide something that I just think is really unique to this place, that mm-hmm. that marriage of great art and beautiful historic gardens and a commitment to community and education is it's sparkly and fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's we need a lot more of it.
Right. And yet, on the other side of Riverside, there is this powerful place that you've created and that people are migrating to mm-hmm. And enjoying. And I want to talk a bit more about the social activism mm-hmm. part of your life, because you do a lot of that through the art. But I know that in a given week, say, if I go to the library and I see that there's a talk on providing accessibility to differently abled people, I will find you moderating that. If I go to a march downtown because people feel that these Civil War monuments are racist and hurtful to half of our citizens, and that they should probably come down, I'm going to find you there marching and holding a sign and leading the way. And then, you know, I go on the weekend to yellow house, and there you are, you know, in your little black dress, looking gorgeous, and introducing the speakers and the artists and that kind of thing. So it's, I just want to know, number one, how do you juggle all that? And also talk to us about the causes that are really important to you and how you plan to impact them.
So for me, that connection between art and activism and envisioning the world that at least I want to live in is something that's been a part of me since childhood. And I feel like I'm just now understanding how to live that as fully as I possibly can. And, you know, selfishly, it's one of the reasons for Yellow House existing is to create a place where those things can have equal weight in my life and in the lives of other people who are hungry for the same thing. I feel strongly that speaking truth to power, as trite and simplistic as that sort of sounds, sits at the center of our ability to even make progress as a human race and as a city. And that's harder to do than I think most of us would like it to be. Mm-hmm. The pressures of what you can and can't do and say publicly, how that can impact job, social standing, your personal economics. Yes, we know it can impact family relationships and friendships, but mm-hmm. it's challenging. And so I have selfishly created a way to be able to try to live that as authentically as I can. So whether it's taking on the Confederate monuments or speaking up for gender liberation, or speaking up for the environment, which doesn't have its own voice.
And reproductive
rights.
You recently had a...
public education. Mm-hmm. All of that to me, even though for a lot of people they seem like separate issues, I think the threads of connection between all of them are so strong. And for me, it's about equity. It's about how do we create a world where everyone truly does have the same opportunities. And I feel like the conversation is often that somehow that reality does exist. And I just don't believe that it does. Even when laws are written to say that we all have equal opportunity, it doesn't necessarily play out that way on the ground. And I am very aware that I am a cisgender white woman who comes from a lower middle class background. And, you know, how dare I try to walk through this world thinking I know anything about most of this. Mm-hmm. But it's really love of people, and my own fears for what can go wrong, what we do see going wrong, mm-hmm. That I think drives me to do that work. And I wish I had a better way, a better toolbox for knowing how to play a role in solving some of those issues. What I know is art. So I'm just constantly trying to figure out how does that world that I know intersect with creating that better world, not just for me, but for my neighbors? What does that look like? Mm-hmm. And how do we at least, even if it's imperfect, awkward and messy, which it is on the daily, how do we keep moving? Mm-hmm. And that's just the language I know how to speak.
Well, you do it very well. And I think you're a role model for me and for others in the community who are cisgendered white women from lower middle class upbringing as well, who, you know, care, but again, don't have the, we don't live that experience, but we do care and we want to help. So I'm glad that you're doing what you're doing. Talk to me a little bit about your work in the Kenknight Drive mm-hmm. area. They were devastated by a couple of hurricanes in recent years. And talk about what's happening over there. And I know your work is a small piece of that. There are lots of people involved in trying to help make it better, but you can talk to us about your experience.
So the biggest lesson I've learned from doing all of this work is the importance of, again, listening, centering other people's voices, needs, desires, aspirations, and then trying to determine if there's anything that you can offer up that aligns with that. And the work on Kenknight Drive is a good example. Right after Hurricane Irma came through, Yellow House had actually just opened like 2 weeks before that. Not even. It was about 10 days. And I came back from having evacuated to find that my life was fine. My family's homes were fine. My work was fine. My home was fine. But getting a call from a very good friend of mine, Pastor Gundy, who's very involved in social justice work in the city. And he asked me to come and help him in a particular neighborhood that he had gotten a call from. And so we entered the neighborhood about a week or so after the storm. They still did not have electricity. They had flooded hip high. There was debris everywhere, sort of just toxic muck in everybody's homes and outside their homes, sopping beds. I mean, you name it, the kind of thing you would imagine. Mm. And, you know, it's a year and a half or so later and I'm still working there. And I ask myself regularly why that is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was a clear need. I certainly wasn't the one skilled enough to be able to meet most of those needs. But became part of a small grassroots network of some amazing individuals and small organizations trying to amplify the needs of that community and solve some of those in the short term. Everything from rebuilding homes to trying to connect social services to families that are in the neighborhood. And yes, to eventually using art to tap into people's curiosity and creativity and give the residents there yet one more way to express who they are and that they are more than that crisis. Mm-hmm. And it's been incredible work. It's been challenging work. I'm not sure I've ever been more ill-suited to something that I'm trying to do, but I've tried to stay committed to it. And I've made a lot of mistakes along the way. And again, I'm one of many people trying to make a difference on the ground there. But it has transformed and informed my work as an artist and my work as a cultural leader.
Great. Now, Scribbler's Corner at River of Grass is about writing. And I interview writers. And when I first invited you to come and talk to us, you very modestly said, "Oh no, I'm not a writer."
It's true,
you know. And I laughed because whenever I have an opportunity to take a look at Facebook, yours is one of the pages I routinely check out. Number one, to find out what exciting, wonderful things going on at Yellow House, but also because I deeply enjoy the way that you express yourself there. And you will often write many, and that's M-I-N-I, many essays on a particular topic that I feel strongly about, and you just say things exactly the way I'm thinking them, but I, as a professional writer who makes my living at writing, don't come up with, you know, the proper words to say. And so I scoffed when you said you're not a writer. I said, you are a writer and you're a very impactful writer. You write in a short form blogging, but you move a lot of people and you speak for a lot of people who maybe don't have a voice or think they don't have time to write about these things. So one of the ways that you really have had an impact on me is that You will write about a topic and you will take action on a topic and you will expose something that, you know, needs exposing to the world. But then there are these moments of vulnerability where you just say, oh man, I'm tired, or wow, I messed up today. And in a world where we're all putting on this face for one another, we're all trying to project this perfect image out there to the world, to have someone whom I like and admire say, man, I tried to do a good thing today and I totally stepped in it. That means a lot, because that gives me permission to screw up, to do or say the wrong thing with a good heart, and then get up the next day and try again. Because you don't quit. You know, you don't quit. And that's something I really, really admire. So I picked out one of your Facebook mini essays. And if you don't mind, it is a moment of real vulnerability. So I hope you won't mind reading that for us.
Sure. Thank you. I appreciate you making me, at least for a moment, feel like a writer. So, so this one that you picked is recent. Work in community was hard today. It kicked my ass. Progress that is too slow. Stories that are too hard to hear, but we must. Love that is too real. And challenges that are too big. And as I find solace in the safe little nest that I call home, I feel an uncomfortable rage for all the people, elected officials, and organizations who easily toss around words like community, outreach, impact, listening to understand, and of course the overused diversity and inclusion. The work is messy, it's awkward, beautiful, and so hard. There's no way that those sitting in their ivory towers of goodness or their wealth managers' offices stroking checks can truly understand the real lived experiences of our neighbors, the real meaning of all of these words people use so easily. I still grapple with it all, fall so very short, and can barely understand. We are failing while celebrating our righteousness. We are perpetuating lies while we lift up our false wokeness. It has become a marketing campaign, punctuated by press releases that too many blindly believe. If you aren't all in, you aren't in it at all. If your hands aren't dirty and your heart doesn't hurt, you aren't doing the work. If you don't see darkness with your eyes wide open, you are not living in truth. If you don't understand you are part of the problem, then you truly are. And I am feeling all of this and know that I am not alone.
Hate to break it to you, Hope, but you're a writer. Wow, that was beautifully done. And beautifully read. I'm looking at a list of the beliefs that you've listed on the Yellow House website as, you know, the core feelings or the heart of Yellow House's philosophy. And so I wanted to have you just sort of talk about some of these so that people understand even more deeply what it is that you're doing there and how the work is a manifestation of these core beliefs that you put out there. And so talk to me about the public engagement arm of that, what it is that you're doing in that arena and why.
So the public engagement part takes lots of forms, right? It's about artists being able to connect with one another, to be able to lift up their stories within community. It's about families being able to explore together and with other families. And that public engagement piece as a core belief means that this is not an organization in which the person who owns it, runs it, wakes up every day thinking about it is driving the work. So from the standpoint of Yellow House, public engagement is not passive. It's not just people walking in the door to view an exhibition. It's about the public actually helping to create what it is we do, to critique, to be deeply involved in the conversation of the work that we do. And so for me, the public engagement part is, I don't know if it's the absolute heart of the institution. I think the heart of the institution is complicated, but that's one of the biggies.
Mm-hmm. And some of the others here, I mean, there, I urge people to go to the yellowhouseart.org website and take a look at everything. But one of them is art making is essential to well-being and becomes more valuable when it leaves its pedestal to become part of one's everyday life. So what do you mean by that? And how can people get their hands dirty? You've used that expression with the social justice aspect, but also with the art getting dirty. I could see how those tie in. So talk about that.
Yeah, so the connection between art and wellness, you know, I believe in it because I know how it impacts my life, and that's probably the most authentic of the experiences I can speak to. But I also know it for fact just from long experience of how the arts connect specifically into wellness and healthcare and sort of our mental well-being. We actually have a partnership with Mayo Clinic, and I see this play out with residents and nurses and hence their patients, that when we can tap into our own creativity, when we can find space within the chaos of the world through art making or writing, that it gives us a place and time to heal whatever that healing needs to look like. For me, wellness is also, it's an individual thing, but it's also a community thing, right? It's, for me, the arts build empathy. They have inherent in them joy and play, and all of those things are good for us, right? So, so yeah, and I think take that idea of taking it off the pedestal to where it becomes just a normal everyday thing, the thing like breathing or brushing our teeth, or I led a workshop over the weekend with a group of women and we watercolored for about 10 minutes of this longer visit. And one of the women at the end said, "Oh my gosh, I haven't done that in so long." And I said, "How did it feel?" And she said, "It felt like freedom." Mm-hmm. She said, "I wasn't thinking about anything else except that paintbrush on the paper, the music that was piping in my ears, and it was just joyful. It was just nothing but joy." And, you know, does that completely change a life? No, but if it felt good and provided respite, even if it was for 10 minutes, that's not a bad thing.
Yeah. Sort of reminds us of the things that we loved to do when we were younger and we gave ourselves permission to play and have fun. And I know that in my life, when I take a moment to stop working and do something silly and fun, there's always that little voice saying, "Well, you should be doing this instead. You should that's be doing right. that instead." And that's when you can drown that voice out and just be in the moment and enjoy it, whether what you create is worthy of hanging on the wall in a gallery or not, you know, you've...
And that's not really even the point.
Right, exactly,
you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I think we all appreciate the really well-written poem and the incredible painting and the, you know, gorgeous sculpture, but I'm sort of more interested in the process of creativity and also believe in the power of that being at times a shared experience. I think that's what helps it become normal for people when you share it at a table with a bunch of other people who are also making a mess in paint. But if it's joyful and you're learning more about yourself as you're doing it, I just think that's incredibly powerful work mm-hmm. for people to be doing for themselves and for the people that they love.
Mm-hmm. I see. Talk to me a bit about the value of collaboration. Mm. You have your hand in a lot of things here in Jacksonville. And what are some of the creative collaborations that you see maybe happening or beginning to happen or that possibly should be happening?
I mean, there's so many of them. And I know coming from the cultural community in the city, it is a sector that collaborates beautifully. And I think it's really a model for the rest of the city. There was and still is, an initiative called Cultural Fusion in the city of Jacksonville, in which artists and art organizations of all sizes come together to talk about topics that matter and to align their work in a collaborative way around that work. And one, it's fun. You share resources. You get a variety of ideas around the table. Gives you different lenses to look through. And, you know, it's all about relationships. And we know strong relationships on any level make a community stronger. So the cultural community certainly has some rich collaborations, and some that are surprising to people, you know, where you have science organizations working with symphonies, you know, to talk about climate change. And you've got individual artists working within spaces like the local jail system or in hospitals. And I'm sort of interested in those. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't even say less traditional collaborations, because actually, I think most of human history, those collaborations were the norm. Mm-hmm. But I feel like we're kind of getting back to that. I think in downtown, we're seeing collaborations popping up between arts organizations and libraries and developers to try to make for a richer, more vibrant downtown. You know, if I ever have any concerns around collaboration and partnership, it's that I think those are also words that people throw around really easily. Mm-hmm. And for me, real true collaboration is about individual elements coming together and creating something that otherwise would have never existed, right? It's about the sort of exponential possibility. And I feel like a lot of times the way we talk about and do partnerships tends to sit on the surface. And so I don't think we use collaboration well to attack some of our greatest challenges as a result. Mm-hmm. You know, we're a community that still sometimes focuses on scarcity instead of abundance. Mm-hmm. And how we define abundance, I think, is can be problematic. And so with scarcity, I think competition sometimes plays a bigger role than collaboration. You know, everybody mm-hmm. sort of feels like they're grabbing for resources. And if you start playing together, it might mean there's something you're not going to get. And
rather than realizing that it's an opportunity for everyone to bring their resources together.
That's right.
Make something bigger than the sum of its parts.
That's right. I mean, even the conversations, you know, we were having about your project, Jacks by Jacks, it's a beautiful example of collaboration between cultural organizations, between individual writers, between a city that is working hard to find itself and to develop a voice. And so that kind of work is, I think, super exciting. And I feel like there's a real hunger from most people in our community to be engaged in those collaborations. We certainly know that people benefit from them.
You know, two things come to mind when you brought up Jacks by Jacks, and thank you for that. One is, I'm thinking on the one hand about, you know, there's this lovely outreach of art in the Ken Knight area.
Yes.
But I'm wondering, I know, you know, dozens of writers who would probably be very willing and able to help people express themselves through words.
I love that.
And I know there's an amazing poet that you've come across in the area that I'm twisting your arm, hoping to that you'll introduce us so I can have him on the podcast and hear his words. You've just talked about how powerfully his words have moved you.
Well, and that's a great example of collaboration too, right? I mean, this particular poet, Alton Gordon, he's an artist, lives on Kennight Drive, recently did his first public reading at a film screening by the St. John's Riverkeeper. So it was a night all about climate change and the impact of river rise on our community and communities around the world. And they brought in Alton to read some of his poetry, to bring his experiences to life for the people in that room.
And he had just lived through
Hurricane Irma.
After the...
Right? Irma. And so he was there to talk about that impact on marginalized communities, how climate change and historic racial disparity connect. And I'm not sure how many people would think about taking an environmental organization like St. John's Riverkeeper and partnering with a poet from a marginalized community who was in part brought to the table by an arts organization that really sort of has nothing to do with hurricane work and yet is completely embedded in it, right? So it's like this strange mix of people and organizations who all are looking at the world through a specific lens, and yet by all those pieces and elements coming together, something really powerful happened for the people that were in that room tonight or that night, that including Alton. I think when we're open to those kinds of collaborations that feel a little risky only because they're a little strange, I think that's exciting. And granted, it could just be a big old train wreck. It could be a mess, but why not?
Sure. You won't know until you try.
That's right.
Yeah. We've been trying to reach out through Jacks by Jacks out into the community. There's an established set of established writers. Maybe they make their living that way. Maybe they've just published some things, but they're well known. And when you want a writer, you think of this group of people, and they're lovely, and I love them all and enjoy when they work with Jacks by Jacks. And I know that in a city this size, there's this huge untapped group of people who are working quietly at their desks, maybe not showing their work to anyone. And I know that there's some really good stuff out there. So this year we've instituted the Jacks by Jacks writing workshops, where we go out into the community and we say, come in, let's workshop your stuff, and maybe you'll want to be in the festival this year. The other thing that you've made me really think hard about today is something you said earlier, which is about, we've always had this great piece of Jacks by Jacks, which is the student showcase. And we bring in wonderful writers from the colleges and the high schools and say, you know, here's your opportunity to stand on stage and read your work to a large group of appreciative listeners. But I love what you said about, why are we focusing on it being student work, that these are just writers and their work is either worthy of being read to people or it's not. And you really made me think, but do I want to do a student showcase, or do I just want to invite students to read with everyone else? So see what you've done? We're collaborating right there.
I love that, right? Yeah. Because I think we tend to want to put people within these boxes. And so then the people who tend to come to breathe in their work are those that would be inclined to, let's say, you know, at a student showcase, you get lots of parents and teachers.
Exactly.
And I know one of the last times we had an exhibition opening where we had young people very much in the mix, the young people were saying, who are all these people at our opening? We're so used to knowing everybody who looks at our art. And I'm like, this is the community, baby. And then at the same time, we had those established artists in our community saying, holy cow, who is making this work? Who are all these people? Mm-hmm. And so you end up with this beautiful mix, which I think actually lifts up everyone, mm-hmm. including those who are established. So I think that's super cool that you're even thinking about that.
Well, you
that
could have, be interesting. You have really made me think. And like you, I don't have a big board to beg permission of. I can beg pardon from the community later if I make that decision.
And the community will tell you if something doesn't go well. Yeah, I'm learning that. They will tell you, and the key is to listen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
that's something I'm working on, is that whole listening thing. So I think we have just a couple of minutes left. What have I forgotten to ask you that you would like the world to know about either you or your social justice work or Yellow House? What do you want to leave Jacksonville and the listening public with?
I think, that's such a hard question, isn't it? for me, it's this incredible sense of gratitude. Love being here with you, but just feeling part of a community that is so rich with creatives. I'm just daily impressed by the people who make art in this community and write in this community and are actors and directors and dancers. And a lot of people would say Jacksonville's not the easiest community for those who are practicing in the arts. And yet Jacksonville is also a community where you can pretty much do anything that you set out to do. And you have access to the people who are interested in similar things. And I'm not sure there are that many other places that are as beautiful as Jacksonville is, with the kind of challenges that we have, which are for real, mm-hmm. Where artists can actually move through those worlds, the world of education and the environment and racial equity and government. And I just think artists are our truth tellers. I think there are problem solvers. And I think Jacksonville will make even greater progress as it continues to figure out how to center the voices and work of our artists. So I am wrapping up this conversation just feeling grateful for this view out this window, which I know nobody listening to this can see, but this gorgeous view of a river and a magnolia tree that just is so Jacksonville. It's a powerful place to be if you can withstand a little bit of the heat and stay persistent. And I'm grateful that I have a feeling of being able to do that at this time.
Well, we're grateful that you've been with us today, and we'll continue in our support of you and Yellow House Art, and you just keep teeing them up and knocking them down.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Scribbler's Corner is produced by Brad Kuhn and Associates, a multimedia production company, making authors' dreams come true for almost a decade. BKNA offers a full print shop with design services for everything from books to bookmarks and banners, digital audio recording, video book trailers, and animation, priced for self-published authors and indie publishers. The Corner is also brought to you by the Jacks by Jacks Literary Arts Festival, Jacksonville Writers Writing Jacksonville, now in its sixth year. Writer applications open July 1st for this year's event, which will be held on Saturday, November 16th. And finally, a podcast wouldn't be a podcast without listeners like you. If you like what you're hearing and want me to keep doing it, please do me the favor of subscribing and spreading the word by telling at least one friend about us.